All right, good evening and welcome. We are just a day or so before Yom Kippur. As I mentioned, every year as we begin the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, it's really one of these special times in the year, the two drashas, Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos Shuvah, before Pesach, before Yom Kippur, to spend time together learning, spend time together getting ready, spend time together working on any particular topic that we choose for that particular year, and working on it together. This year, for many reasons, I thought it would be a good idea to discuss this issue of the conflicting, complex issue of individual aspects that we have as Jews versus the collective aspect, the communal aspect. We are part of a whole, and at the same time, we are individual. So when what's in it for me conflicts or is at odds with what's best for us as a whole and how we manage that conflict. In the tradition of many that came before me who had the minhag of beginning always a Shabbos Shuvah Drasha with a Rambam. So we've done that over the past years as well, and I'd like to start this year with two Rambams addressing this issue of the whole, the collective, the communal, versus the individual. Let's start with the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, which is generally the Rambam that we choose from this particular time of year. The Rambam in the second parak discusses the following idea. He talks about the concept of tshuva, tefillah, of this particular time of year. Afal pisha tshuva v'hatza'aka yafel olam. It's always a beautiful thing to do tshuva, to cry out in tefillah, says the Rambam. It's lovely, it's wonderful. But despite the fact that it's always good, ba'asara hayomim shebein Rosh Hashanah v'yom HaKippurim, during these times, the 10 days that we're in right now, the time between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, he yofe bioser, umiskabelas hi miyad. This is the most beautiful time for tefillah, it's the most beautiful time for tshuva. It's immediately accepted. Quotes the pasuk, dirshu Hashem behim matzo, seek out Hashem when he can be found. Hashem is present with us these 10 days more intensely than in general, and therefore this is the time. This is the time to call out. Then the Rambam adds, even though we just set up that these 10 days are different, are unique, tefillah is answered right away, he says, you should know, b'med duvarim amurim, when is it true that we make the distinction between the whole year and these 10 days, that these 10 days are quicker to be accepted? That's biyachid. That's only true for an individual. An individual, it's nice to do tshuva all year round, but you're guaranteed success during these 10 days. Aval tzibur, but if you talk about a community as a whole, says the Rambam, kol zman she'osim tshuva v'tzoakim b'lev shalom, anytime they do tshuva, they call out together, they are always guaranteed an answer. So that as individuals, all year round, you're okay, it's nice. But your only guarantee is these 10 days we're in right now. As individuals, we're good, these 10 days. But as a tzibur, it's always a guarantee. If a tzibur comes together and davens together as a tzibur, they call out in tshuva and tza'aka, always answered. And with this, the Rambam introduces us to the idea that there's something different, fundamentally different about the concept of a tzibur. That it's not just the sum of its parts, but that somehow Hashem treats the tzibur differently than he'll treat a yachid, an individual. You know, depending on the time of year, we'll judge you based on your merits and how well you daven and whatever else is going on. These 10 days are guaranteed. But the rest of the year, but a tzibur always has direct access. This is why, by the way, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, we always daven b'loshen rabim. All of our tefillos, we never daven for ourselves alone. Even when we're at parnasa for health, it's always rifa'enu. Heal us, barech aleinu, give us parnasa. We always put our tefillahs into a general language, because the Gemara says, eino mo'es tefiloson shel rabim. The tefillah of the rabbi is always accepted. It's never repelled, so to speak, by Hashem. It's always okay. In the Rambam's language, he says, tefillah satzibar nishma'es tamid. It's always heard, it's always accepted. So that's on the one hand, the Rambam starts it off in Hilchos Shuva. There's a value to a tzibur. It's a new entity. It's an entity which is guaranteed access before Hashem. Then the Rambam tells us, just one parak later in Hilchos Shuva, in Parak Gimel, he discusses the idea of this time of year, how the Sifrei Chaim and the Sifrei Mesim, the books of life, the books of death, are open before Hashem, and he weighs our actions and he judges us. And at the end of that discussion, he says, Lefikach, therefore, tzarech kol adam sheyira atzmo, kol ashana kula, kilu chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayiv. Person has to look at himself all year round as if he's smack in the middle. Half merits, half demerit. We don't know which way you're going to go. Every day of a person's life, a Jew wakes up and says, today is the day that's going to determine my status. I don't know what's going to be. You make one mistake today, it's going to push me over to the other side. Except the Rambam adds, not just that it's going to push you as an individual over to the other side, he says, it's going to push you over to the other side. Yes, kol ha'olam kulo. You're going to take the whole world with you if you make one small mistake. V'garim lo hashchasa. You're going to be the cause of the destruction of the whole world. On the other side, he says, asa mitzvah achas. And if a person wakes up and says, today is the day I'm going to determine my future, and he does one good thing, he does a mitzvah, all right, hichrias atzmo, ve'es kol ha'olam kulo l'kav schus. Then not only will you push you as an individual off to the other, to the side of good, but then he adds again, you'll take the entire world with you. V'gorim lo ulahem teshua v'hatzal, and you'll cause not only for yourself, but for the whole world, salvation, success, everything will happen. I would have understood if he said, I, as an individual, should enter into every day. That's a way to live. That every moment you think life is hanging in the balance, and I have to choose well. I have to. I don't have a resource. I don't have a reservoir. I have to live well today. So the Ram says, not only should you live that way for yourself, but the whole world is based on the choices that you're going to make. Therefore, he concludes, that's why Klal Yisrael has developed a custom, laharbos bitztaku v'masim tovim, v'lasok b'mitzvos, to do tztaka, wonderful actions of masim tovim, to be osek in mitzvos, v'rash Hashanah yom ha-kippur mi'eser mikol Hashanah. That's why Jews, these 10 days were careful. We do things above and beyond what we normally do. He brings the example of waking up early for slichos. We mentioned on Shabbos the idea of eating pas Yisrael, taking on that particular minog, or whatever we do. This is the week between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because everything hangs in the balance. Not just my individual life, the whole world hangs in the balance during this particular time. And therefore, we're particular to do things. Now, we could just learn this Rambam and go home. This is all we need for Aseres Yimei Teshuva, the idea of how close Hashem is to us and the way that we can daven. These 10 days, it's immediately accepted. The second Rambam we studied about how everything hangs in the balance. But what I wanted to just bring out with these two Rambams are the two different attitudes or perspectives that he introduces. The first one saying a tzibur is fundamentally different, much more powerful than an individual. The tzibur itself is always answered when it cries out, is always, their tshuva is accepted. And then the other Rambam says, the tzibur is actually dependent on the actions of the individual. What the individual decides to do, how the individual chooses to act, not only impacts himself or herself as an individual, but, says the Rambam, you have to know, you're going to take the whole world with you. My actions take the whole, what do I have to do? What is the world contingent upon, dependent on my actions? Let me, a person does what they do, let them get rewarded or punished, whatever happens. Where do you get the idea that all of a sudden, whatever this one person individual does, all of a sudden that should impact everybody else? But the Rambam introduces us to both of these ideas, and this is really going to be the subject of our discussion, which are, most of the sources we'll cover are not new. Hopefully we'll just try to put them in a context of this double aspect that we have as Jews. On the one hand, we are individuals, and as individuals, we have a certain responsibility and power as the individual. And on the other hand, we're part of a bigger picture. And that bigger picture, Klal Yisrael, being part of the Jewish people, is fundamentally different and more powerful than anything that we can do as individuals. And they're two separate aspects. And the question that we really want to address is, what happens when they conflict? My own personal responsibilities, what I need to do, and conflict with really what's going on in the bigger picture with the Jewish people. Like when someone called me, they said, yeah, I can't make your shiur tonight. I said, okay, I'm sorry, it's all right. He says, I'll tell you why. My baseball team is in the playoffs. The softball, I think he said, I didn't even think it was baseball, probably it was softball. My softball team is in the playoffs. I said, it'd be better if you wouldn't have told me why you couldn't have made it. He said, you can't make it, okay. Your softball team is in the playoffs. He says, I'm part of a team. I have a responsibility, you know, to my teammates. It's like not fair that I should have, you know, be with them through thick and thin, through rain and through everything, all the way get up to this point. And now I disappear on them in the playoffs. I said, oh, you're the topic of my discussion. What happens when I have an individual need? I need to learn. I need to go to a shir. I have to get ready for Yom Kippur. And then I have a communal need. I'm part of a group. And the group needs me to be doing one thing, and I personally need to be doing something else. How do we manage that? It comes up all the time. this particular discussion, I don't think is so hard to figure out what a person needs to do, but we'll leave that for another time. But this comes up all the time, where in a spiritual sense, my spiritual needs require or would advise me to do one thing, and my being part of something bigger pushes me in a different direction, and that's complicated, as it often is. It's probably more complicated than we'll have a simple answer for, but let's at least learn through the discussion, covering a little bit quickly of the basic ideas. Where do we see the concepts of the us as individuals, as a community, and then address some of the issues, some fascinating cases where they conflict. But let's start with the power of the individual. One of the most famous sources, and really one of the most powerful sources to address, is a Mishnah Maseches Sanhedrin. I'm sure you've all heard this Mishnah before. It is quoted all the time. The Mishnah says, discussing why did Hashem do things as such when He created the world, that He created man as an individual. All the other creatures in the world, animals, fish, birds, seems pretty clear in the discussion of the 6 days of creation, were created as a species. There are lots of them all at once. But not so mankind. Mankind descends from a single person. A single human being is created, and from that human being, the entire world descends. And the Mishnah asks, why should that be? What was the reasoning, the logic, the message that Hashem is conveying to all of us over the fact that man was created alone? The Mishnah gives three answers. The one that's most relevant to us tonight is as in source number 3, Lilam decha, to teach us, shekol hama'abe nefesh achas mi Yisrael, a person who takes away, destroys, kills one Jew, ma'ale alav hakosuv kilu ibed olam male. It's as if you kill the entire world out. From the fact that you see the whole world descended from one single human being, you take the life of a human being, it's as if you're viewed as if you didn't just kill one person, you killed the entire world. And the opposite, says the Mishnah, would also be true. A person who has the ability to save a life, you can do something to save an actual life of a person who otherwise wouldn't be able to exist, and you save them, it is viewed, ma'ale alav hakosuv ki lukayim olam, you saved the whole world. All of this learned from the fact that man was created alone. And from one came everything. And therefore we have to treat every single person as if they are a world, an entire olam malay. And that would have been, if the mission would have just stopped there, significant and sufficient. The mission gives two other reasons why man was created alone. But then the mission concludes, lefikach, now that we've gone through these reasons why man was created alone, one of them being to teach us the value of a life, kol echad ve'echad chayiv lomar, every person is chayiv lomar. Not a recommendation, not a nice idea, not an eitz tova. Every person is obligated to say, Bishvili nivra ha'olam. The world was created for me. Now, for a religion that talks a lot about humility and not putting yourself front and center and not taking the approach of, I am the center of the world and everything should go around me, this is a very powerful statement that a person is actually obligated, again, not just a piece of advice, not just you're allowed to think this every once in a while. Every person has to wake up in the morning and say, Bishvili nivra ha'olam. The world was created for me. For me, this entire world is kedai. It was worth it. Every single thing going on the entire planet, for me. That is an empowering statement. And it really should be part of the ritual, you're like Moda Ani Lefanecha, like I'm alive, ha, I'm alive, Bishvili Nivra Olam, and the whole world is here for me. Now, hopefully by the end of the shiur, we'll see what therefore a person should do with that. That can go in a couple of different directions if a person thinks that the whole world exists for them. But to start with, the Mishnah says very clearly, a person is obligated to think that way, to think and believe that the whole world is here. Now, we deal with this in a very similar way, this power of the individual and the way that we want the individual to think. We just finished Rosh Hashanah, and in Unisana Tokef, as we go through this most powerful moment of the day, and we describe how we are judged kivnei maron. We're judged like a shepherd would pass sheep through his staff one at a time. The Gemara goes through various different interpretations of what exactly does it mean, but they all, one at a time, like an army officer would count his soldiers, or like two people walking on a mountain path, and then it gets so narrow you can only pass one at a time, or like sheep passing through. But literally, when we're judged, we are judged one at a time. And the significance of that is, when you stand alone, there's no one else to rely on. There's no one else to say all the excuses that we come up with all the time of, it's not my fault, this one did like this, and my parents, and my children, and my community, the rabbi's a problem. You can come up with everything you want. But on Rosh Hashanah, you're judged, and there's no one else around. It's judged alone, because Shvili Nivra alone, the world is created for me, and therefore we have to stand and stand alone. There's no one else to rely on, to make excuses. That's simply the way that it goes. In Hasidish thought, you know, the Sefer Torah, the Gemara says that there's 600,000 letters in the Sefer Torah. It's not exactly the exact number. The Gemara is conveying an idea that for every neshama, there's a letter in the Torah. So I saw this beautiful Hasidish thought. But there's a halacha in Hilchos Sefer Torah. What happens if two letters touch each other? Baal Kori is reading, and every once in a while, you know, like that moment, everyone's like, oh no, like all of a sudden the Baal Kori stops in the middle of an aliyah. It's like, oh. Maybe it's just me because I'm the one who's going to be asked the question and the pressure is going to be on me to decide me. I don't know. So not everybody else have that reaction. That's my reaction always, like, oh no. And so it's like, the Baal Kori calls the Rebbe over, like, it looks like they're touching. And everybody, like, goes, like, oh, you get the whole, you're familiar with that whole thing, right? So, what's the problem? Okay, so they're touching. You can still read it clearly. This is one word. This is another word. No. If they're just in a smudge, the whole Sefer Torah is puzzle. Two letters, barely touching, but they're touching. If it's not what's called mukaf gvil, if it's not completely surrounded by the white, the whole thing is no good. Every letter represents a neshama. Every neshama is a world unto itself. It's not attached. It's not connected. Alone. As an individual, exists and has to be able to exist alone. Unhindered, unattached. You don't need anything else. Just this letter alone has to be able to be independent and on itself. And that's the same idea. It's that there's a value, a power to the individual of Bishvili, Nivra, Olam. We are judged alone. We must stand alone. And we stand proud. And in a way that's a positive. Bishvili, Nivra, Olam. As we go through that. That's all on the one side that we do not, philosophers talk throughout the centuries on this question of, are we really all individuals? Are we just part of a bigger? As far as how do we see ourselves as individuals? Very important. Significant. Very, very important to be an individual and to see ourselves as individual. On the other hand, we're part of Klal Yisrael. And we know that, but that's also very significant. The Maral asks, I've quoted this many times because it's just such a beautiful concept. The Maral asks, if you had to say, like, who are the greatest individual Jews who've ever lived? If we were to ask such a question. So on the list, it would be hard to actually probably come up with a one. But if on that list would certainly be the three generations in a row of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They're on the list, there's no question. The Avos are there. The Maral asks, why didn't they get the Torah? Why is it that we have these great Jews living, by the way, most of their lives in the land of Israel? Certainly by the time Avram Lech Lecha, when we really meet him, he's in the land. Yitzchak spends his entire life in the land. Yaakov has a 20-year hiatus, and then the rest of his life, till the very end, he goes back. But while they're there, give them the Torah. Who gets it? A Jewish nation. If you were to compare the spiritual levels of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and the Jews of the desert and all the stories we read and the complaints and this and that and the kvetching and the idolatry of the Egel Azah, which one makes more sense? Who should get it? The Maral asks this question. I don't understand. Why do they not? They get individual mitzvahs. Avram gets Bris Milah, Yaakov get Anasha, but like, what does Klal Yisrael have over them that they should get the Torah? And the Maral says the most beautiful answer. They have one thing over Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that actually is their name. They're Klal Yisrael. They're a nation. And the Torah does not belong to an individual. It can't. It can only be given to an Am, to a Klal. In his language, in source number 4, the second underlined part. Well, in the end of the first underlined part, he says, "V'zeh Hashem, this name, Klal Yisrael, nish'ar lahem b'lishinui li'olmei olamim." Forever, we're Klal Yisrael. Individuals will come and go in Klal Yisrael, but we are as much Klal Yisrael as the generation that left Mitzrayim in the desert. They're Klal Yisrael, we're Klal Yisrael. The Jew who lived in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash is part of Klal Yisrael, like we are. No different. We are as much a part of Klal Yisrael in Galus, 2,000 years removed from the Beis Hamikdash. We are as part of Klal Yisrael as they were. And that is the only way you can receive an eternal Torah, is to be an eternal nation. He's writing the second underlying part. How can you give this eternal gift, asher ein lo shinoi, which has no change, to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov? How do you give it to individuals? Ki bama sheheim pratim, they're individuals, v'haprat yesh lo shinoi, an individual can change. Ki ka'asher meis Avraham, when Avram died, ein kan Avram, he's not in the world anymore. V'chein Yitzchak v'chein Yaakov. You can't give a Torah to somebody who's going to disappear. Then what's going to happen to the Torah? What happens to the gift? You give it to an eternal people, a nation. The nation is forever. Nation is ours. We're always here. And therefore, as much as we can say it as an individual, Bishvili Nivra HaOlam, on the other hand, a Jew can never stand alone. A Jew has nothing as an individual. He only has what we have by being part of the bigger picture of Klal Yisrael. And this expresses itself, the idea that we're part of a nation, all of us individuals as part of that bigger picture, which has a new name, Klal Yisrael, expresses itself in a number of different ways. We just read two weeks ago, the bris, a covenant that Moshe tells the Jewish people you're going to make when you cross over the Jordan for the first time, you're going to come in, Har Eval and Har Grizim, you're going to accept upon yourself the bris. And then Pasuk Yedal in source number 5, Moshe says, and the covenant you're going to make, Yes Asher Yashnu Po Imoni Imonayom, those who are here standing physically, Yes Asher Einenu Po, and even this is going to be binding for those who are not here. So we're going to make a covenant for somebody who hasn't been born yet. Why are we subject to the bris of the Torah? Why are we obligated to keep this? Say, well, because our great-great-great-great-great-grandparents accepted the bris when they got to Har Grizim and Har Eval. Okay. So what does it do with me? Why am I bound by that? So Rashi says, V'afim doro sa'asidim li'o, all the future generations. What gives them the right to do that? Because they're not accepting it as individuals. That is what it means to be Klal Yisrael. And it expresses itself that one generation can accept a covenant and then it's binding on every future generation because of that. And we then have responsibilities to each other because we become part of an eternal unit. Then whichever unit is alive at the same time, all of us, for example, are then responsible for each other because of that. Also, we read the week or two ago, the pasuk describes Anistaros Hashem Elokeinu Vaniglos Lono Voneinu Adolam. That which is hidden is Tashem. Meaning, if I don't know, we don't know what's going on amongst each other's homes. That's not any of our problems. That's Hashem's problems. However, Vaniglos, but a revealed problem. Someone's doing something inappropriate publicly amongst the Jewish people. Lono Voneinu Adolam. We're all responsible for that. Rashi points out this is the concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. We're all responsible. That has two major sides of that coin that we're all responsible. In this context, as Rashi says, we're responsible if someone does something wrong and we know about it. We're all responsible. We're all on the hook. There's no such thing of saying, well, I won't get punished for that because they're doing it. It doesn't work that way. So what kind of collective punishment is that? That's what it means to be part of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is one indivisible unit. It just is. And in the same way that someone, if part of the body gets sick, doesn't really work to say, oh, that part of the body is sick, but this part of the body is going to be fine. It doesn't go that way. It's one unit. And if someone is sick, if part of the body is sick, the whole body is sick. And so it goes with Klal Yisrael. And the other side of that is the concept which we're also familiar with, that if any Jew has not yet fulfilled a mitzvah, so every other Jew still has the obligation to be able to do so. So for example, a person can make Kiddush multiple times Friday night, even though they already heard Kiddush, they've fulfilled their obligation, but if they come across a new group of people who haven't yet fulfilled Kiddush, do it again. What gives me that? I made Kiddush already. I fulfilled this obligation. How could I read the Megillah 11 times this past Purim? Because we remember we have 10 people in a room. So, if I've already fulfilled the obligation, how do you read for... If one's obligation is done, we're not on the same level anymore. My obligation is finished and this person is. Doesn't make a difference. If there's another Jew out there who hasn't yet fulfilled an obligation, I haven't fulfilled an obligation. And I feel as missing, and not just I feel missing, halachically, I am as lacking as the person who hasn't done the... I did mine. Yeah, but they didn't. And therefore, I have the ability to make a bracha for someone else, even though I did this bracha already, doesn't matter. Because, kol Yisrael, a raven zel azeh. The same way, if someone's doing something wrong, I'm responsible. And if someone's hasn't yet done something right, I'm also responsible. And I can make a bracha over and over and over again. Same way, just we finished Rosh Hashanah, right? The person blowing shofar, going around, blowing for someone. The person he's blowing for isn't comfortable making the bracha, so the person blowing the shofar will make the bracha for them. They're not yotze. They've already been yotze the mitzvah. Doesn't matter. That's what it means to be part of a group. This is really most beautifully expressed in the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Al Tifrosh Min HaTzibur. Hillel says in source number 7, can't separate from the Tzibur. A Jew who's separated from the Tzibur, who's distinct, who's not attached to the community, is like a leaf that's fallen off the tree. The tree is a source of life. It's a source of sustenance. It's a source of... As long as that leaf stays on the tree, until, of course, fall and winter comes. But as long as everything is, the leaf will survive. The leaf gets its nourishment. You pluck it off, and the leaf doesn't manage anymore. It's cut off from its source of sun. That's Klal Yisrael. All the individuals are leaves on a tree and have to stay a part of that in order to be able to keep its life. Just interesting, the Gemara actually says on that in source number 7, what does it mean not to separate from the tzibur? You have to be mishtatef bitzarasam. You have to feel the pain of the tzibur. Shekola poresh min tzibur eino roa benechamas tzibur. If you don't feel the pain of the congregation, when the tzibur is suffering, and you leave it on, it's not my problem, then you also won't be there when the tzibur receives its nechama and its comfort. You won't be part of that either. And then the Gemara darshins on that particular book. But this idea is, al tifrish me, you can't be parish from the tzibur, right? An individual, as much as the Jew has to wake up every morning and say, bishvili nivra ha'olam, the whole world is here for me, but then he's got to go to shul and be part of a congregation and say, but I'm part of it. I can't live by myself alone in an island. I need to be part of a community. I need to be part of a bigger picture. It doesn't work that I can survive on my own. So as I'm walking or feeling or dealing with a larger community, I'm saying, bishvili, nivra ha'olam, that I join part of this bigger equation. And that's a very strange, but that's the world we live in. We're all familiar with this, dichotomy. The dichotomy is best expressed by Hillel as well, later in Pirkei Avos, when he says, one of our famous Mishnayos, im ein ani li, mi li. If I won't be for myself, well then who will be? Which is a statement that says, I got to look out for number one. Because if I don't, who will? And then Hillel says, uch shani latzmi, and if all that I'm thinking about is me, myself, and I, so ma'ani, what am I? And this most beautifully expresses the two sides of the equation of I'm responsible for myself. Bishvili nivra ha'olam. If I don't look out for myself, who will? And many commentators understand this in a spiritual sense. If I'm not actively engaged in my own growth, my own ruchnis, my own development, who is going to do that for? I have to be in charge of that. And I have to look out for that. I have to guard it. I have to protect it. And I have to be active in making sure that I do the things that I need to do. Because who else is going to do that for me? And then Hillel says, but if that's all you're concerned about is yourself, what are you? What kind of Jew is that? A Jew on an island who's only thinking about themselves? Doesn't work. All right, we'll see. The other two sources, I just gave you a couple of other places. For example, sources 9 and 10 in Kriya Shema, the first paragraph, and this I just to briefly just mention, the first paragraph is singular. We describe v'chol levav, v'chol, v'chol nafshecha. Those are both singular languages. Love Hashem with all your heart and all your soul. And the second paragraph is almost the exact same phrase, except it's plural. Ula avdo b'chol levavchem u'v'chol nafshecha. It went from singular to plural. So Rashi and the Ramban both note, it's almost the exact same idea, but why is it that the Torah commands us to love Hashem and follow all the mitzvahs one time singular and one time plural? So Rashi says, that's exactly right. Azhar liyachid, azhar litzibur. They're two separate entities. One warning is to individuals, and one is to the community. And they don't just because you gave one doesn't mean you gave the other. They're two separate ideas. They both need their own. And the Ramban says, you should just know, because the rewards and punishment that are described in Shema are to the tzibur. The Jewish people can get special divine influence when they need it. Individuals, less so. Individuals, they live in the world. They got reward, they'll get punished at the end of their life. But you don't get open miracles the way Shema describes. That's only for the Jewish people are subject to open miracles. Individuals don't get that same idea, which the Ramban points out that the Aseres HaDibros also are all said B'Lashon Yachid. All the Aseres HaDibros, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, are said singular, that the individual Jew needs to know, you know, you can't think that you're going to be swept up in the community. If the community is doing well, blessings will come and you can do whatever you want. No, as an individual, you're also going to be looked at. And even if the community is doing well, if you're not, doesn't always go that you're going to be. So again, they're both, we could talk about those in depth, but I want to move through those quickly. We play off both sides. We're viewed and judged as individuals and part of the community, and the Torah speaks to us in both those languages. So now we have the two ideas. There's the concept of the Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. I'm an individual, and I'm part of a bigger picture, and they both have their strengths. What are the responsibilities of one to the other? What's the responsibility of a community to its individuals, and of the individual to its community? I want to start with a more dramatic case, but let's take an example of the human body, for example. Let's say a human body and a limb becomes ill, or whatever the right word would be, infected. And the question becomes, should we do an amputation to save the body? We have a finger, a toe, it's a problematic situation, but if we amputate it, we'll save the body. So I don't know, some of you I know are doctors, but what would you say? So what's the process? What do we do in such a situation? So get rid of the finger, right? It's not a question. If we leave it infected, the whole body's going to go. But if we're going to lose a finger, you're going to lose a toe. Okay, we have a problem. There's a problem here. I didn't create the problem, but the problem is here. And in order to salvage the body, you often need to sacrifice a limb. Nebuch, Rachman al-Tan, should never happen, but that's clear. That's what we would do. So what about if we had a similar situation about Klal Yisrael? The Rambam discusses, based on a Gemara, what would be, and it has unfortunately been many times in Jewish history where this has been the world we lived in, terrible times in Jewish history. We're very blessed, and we should recognize how blessed we are all the time to live in the era and the place in the world in which we live. It wasn't always that way for Jews. What would be if a Jewish town was surrounded by threatening non-Jews who wanted blood? And they demanded to the Jews surrounded and trapped in the city, they said, send somebody out, says the Rambam. Send out a woman, and we're going to violate her. And if not, we're taking all the women. Send out an individual, we're going to kill them. And if not, we're going to kill you all. What should the community do in such a circumstance in which they're faced, and I wish this were just theoretical, in Jewish history this was not always theoretical. What is the halacha of the organism, the community, surrounded in such a situation, with such a, you could save thousands of lives by sacrificing one. Save thousands of women by sacrificing one. Are we allowed to or not allowed to? Answer is absolutely not. It's not even a question. Not allowed. Rambam says explicitly, just to see it inside, it's worth it, in source number 11. If the non-Jews surround us and say, "Tnu lano echad mikem v'nehergenu," give us one, we're going to kill him. They're very clear what's going to happen. V'im lav naharog kulchem. We're going to kill you all. And they have the means. And as one of the Israeli prime ministers said this best, I don't remember exactly who or how. When the non-Jews say, "We want to kill you," we believe them. So what's the halacha? Says the Rambam, Yehargu kulam. Let them kill us all. The entire community be killed. Ve'al yimsru lohem nefesh achas miYisrael. We will never give over. Never. Now, you compare that to my parable of the body, and you say, that's not how a single unit, Klal Yisrael, is this body, we're all part of the same whole. In that circumstance, if you can save the body by sacrificing one, of course that's what you do. Save the body. But when it comes to Klal Yisrael, what's the responsibility of the community to its members? You're not allowed to do that. The community has a responsibility to each and every member to say, I can't, I will not, and we will all go down. Every single one of us, man, woman, child. Thousands of lives would be lost. It's as much as there's like, how can you do that? When you say it the other way, it's, wow, how can we do that? We're gonna give up thousands of lives. But no Jew will ever, as a community, be responsible for handing over something. Never. There's a beautiful medrash that describes this in the other way around, that Hashem tested all the great leaders of the Jewish people, the medrash says. Avraham, Moshe, David, the Gemara goes through all the... When Moshe was tested, the medrash says, a beautiful medrash, source number 12, Kishay Moshe royet sono shel Yisro bamidbar. Moshe is the shepherd of his father-in-law Yisro in the desert. Borach mimenu gidi. And one little shepsela, sheep, ran off from the flock. Virotz acharav ad shehigia lechasus, kevan shehigia lechasus, nizdam lo brecha shel mayim, ve'omen agedila. The sheep runs off, Moshe runs after it, and he finally catches up to it at a little spring of water. And the sheep is drinking from the water. Kevan shehigia Moshe, when Moshe finally catches up, panting, running after the sheep, and he sees it's drinking, he says, Anilo aisi odeya shirat aisa mipnei tzom. I didn't realize you were thirsty, he says to the sheep. Shema ayef ata. You must be tired, he says to the sheep that has run off from the flock, and Moshe chases after it. He catches it drinking. Hirkivu Moshe al kseifo v'hayu mahalek. So Moshe picks up the sheep, puts it on its back, and instead of just making it walk back to the flock, he carries it back. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem sees this and says, Yesh lecha rachamim linhog tzoneinu, tzono shel basar v'dam. You have such rachamim on a sheep that's owned by a flesh and blood human being. One sheep of his ran off and you were so concerned, you didn't realize it was, you carried it on your back to get back. That's the kind of leader that I want. Atatiret tzoyin'i Yisrael. You're going to be my shepherd for my people, Hashem says. And so Moshe passed his test, so to speak. When Hashem saw that, you're the type of leader that I want. I remember, this is going back 15 years, 16 years, I don't know exactly. How old are the twins, Avi and Shalamis' boys? 17, 18? 18 years ago, they had a Shalom Zachar on a Friday night in Brooklyn. We were living in Atlanta. We went to the Shalom Zachar in Brooklyn, and I went to some random shul, wherever it was. I don't remember who the Rav was. This super yeshivish shtiebel in the middle of Brooklyn. And the Rav quoted this medrash. And he said, the medrash is praising Moshe for running after the sheep, finding it drinking, that it was tired and hungry, and carrying it back. What about the rest of the flock? There's a shepherd. He abandoned all of the sheep. Hundreds of thousands of the owner. This is the flock is everything. And he ran after one sheep. So that's exactly right. The tzibur will be okay. The leader who understands the individual, that if you don't run after the individual is lost forever. The group, they'll manage to be alone for a little bit. But if you don't go after that one sheep, that shepsel is gone. And Moshe, who understood that leadership is not just worrying about the klal, but every individual within that klal, that's, Hashem says, you'll be noheg mai, manhig mai tzon. You'll be the shepherd. That's the kind of leader that I need. And that's the trait of it. That's, Moshe represents the community. You can't say, we'll be fine. We lose a couple here, we lose a couple there. From the community's perspective, every single member of the community, you can't sacrifice a toe or a finger to save the klal. Everyone has to be given that That's important.
That's the responsibility from the community. Rav Hirsch, this would be an entire share unto itself, which I'm not going to. Rav Hirsch learns the Migdal Bavel, the Tower of Bavel. And what was so terrible about it was it became the obsession of the group to build the tower. And he goes through from the Psukim at the expense of all the individual builders. Didn't matter who was contributing what. All that mattered is what we accomplished. And he quotes a medrash in his commentary on the Migdal Bavel that if a human fell from the scaffolding while they were building the tower and died, they pushed him aside and kept going. But if a brick fell and broke, they would sit and mourn and stop and say, oh, production is going to slow down, we lost the brick. And he based himself on that medrash of it was a corruption of using people to accomplish something and losing sight of what was really important, which was the growth of the people themselves. But that's all from the responsibility of the community to its members, not like the body, which we are, where you're willing to sacrifice a finger or a toe. Mm-mm. Not when it comes to Klal Yisrael at all. What about the other way around? What about the individual, when his needs, what is his responsibility in this big picture, getting back to where we started from, to the Klal, where there's a conflict between the individual's needs and where does the individual fit in, as he says, Bishvili Nivra Olam, as he's trying to be part or fit into this bigger picture. So there are a number of fascinating applications of this, some of which we're familiar, probably one of the most famous ones, which we all know, but we don't always think about in this context. What's the halacha? What's the halacha? Which we're all familiar, we're going to deal with literally in 2 days. If a person's in the middle of Shiva, and Yom Kippur comes, what happens to that person Shiva? It's the end, with every yantiv. Right, we're all familiar, we've all known people, we're, as a community, we'll have a situation, right, where someone's going to get it from Shiva. 2-3 days of Shiva, and then it's done, the whole thing. We've all, I'm sure, been familiar with situations where there's mamish, no Shiva. Kvura happens, Erev Yantiv, literally, they sit for an hour or two, done. And in some situations, it's a blessing to the family, and in most situations, it's really hard. They need the Shiva. Shiva gives us a lot. Why is that? Why does Yantiv end the Shiva? The answer is, the collective joy, the national joy that Klal Yisrael is experiencing with the Yantiv overrides a personal experience that an individual has. The Gemara uses the phrase, this is quoted in the bottom in source 13, as the essay de Rabbim, the mitzvah's assay of the Rabbim, the mitzvah of Simchas Yantiv, of the Rabbim, that the community has, vidachi, and pushes aside the assay of the Yachid. There's a mitzvah's assay of the individual to mourn, there's a mitzvah to grieve, there's a mitzvah to sit Shiva, but Klal Yisrael has a mitzvah to be joyous. What happens when they conflict? And an individual says, I can't be part of Klal Yisrael right now. I can't. I'm in mourning. And the halacha says, you are part of Klal Yisrael. You can't function as an individual when Klal Yisrael is functioning somewhere else. And therefore the shiva has ended. And the exact opposite is true. What happens if a person comes in the middle of the summer and they say, Rabbi, I finally find my basheret, I want to get married. And they choose a date. And the rabbi says this happens every summer. Nope, sorry, can't use that date. Oh, but it's the perfect date. Can't, so why not? It's for 3 weeks. So what? I want to get married. Can't. Why not? Why can't I get married in 3 weeks? Say, we're mourning. I know, but I'm happy. I want to get married. And they come with religious reasons. I want to have a family. Mitzvah there. All the mitzvah. Beautiful. What do we say to them? You can't. You are part of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is mourning. And just like when you're mourning as an individual and Klal Yisrael is experiencing Yantiv, you get swallowed by Klal Yisrael and you cannot experience your personal tragedy expressed. Obviously, a person grieves, but you can't express it when the nation is experiencing one thing. And the same is true the opposite. You want to get married, it's very nice. We're mourning. And you can't celebrate your wedding when we are all in mourning. All those are expressions where the individual has a need, even a religious need, an important need, and it gets swallowed by being part of Klal Yisrael. An example that we spoke about a lot last year and right when the pandemic began, this year we don't have the situation. What happens when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos? Or Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, which whenever Rosh Hashanah does, Sukkot does too. What do? We have a mitzvah to blow shofar. And we all know the halacha. What's the halacha on shofar Rosh Hashanah? Can't blow shofar. It's the only mitzvah we have on Rosh Hashanah. We as we spoke about it, we keep 2 days. But in Sukkot, it's only one day. And the first day falls out on Shabbos. It's the only mitzvah we have. Nope. Sukkot, the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, is only the first day. Every other day is Midrabanan. It's rabbinic. The only Torah mitzvah is the first day. And falls on Shabbos, what do? Nope. Why not? You know the Gemara? The Gemara said, because we're afraid you know what you're doing. The whole shul maybe knows what it's doing, but there's going to be a time and a place somewhere where some Jew is going to know, like, I have to hear shofar, I have to shake lulav and esrog, and he's not going to know what to do, so he's going to carry it from inside his house out into a public domain, violating Shabbos, and therefore, we can't have that. So in order to protect some anonymous Jew in some era in Jewish history that we don't know when, where, or how this will be, every Jew worldwide for now 1,500 years, when Shabbos comes on Rosh Hashanah or Sukkot, doesn't blow shofar, doesn't shake lulav or esrog to protect some Jew out there. There's someone in the community who's going to make a mistake and therefore can't do it. And that's an example in which an individual says, but I know what I'm doing. It's very nice that you know what you're doing. Someone else will not. And to protect them, you can't do this. And this, I use this example many, many times. When, if you remember, when the pandemic started and everybody wanted to make siddurim with, and the law was, no one was doing a seder with family, even grandparents. Everyone was alone. And minyanim backdoor, and we said no. Nobody knew anything about how the virus was spreading, and we needed to protect everyone. And I gave this answer to many people who said to me, I'm going to isolate myself and my kids and my parents and we're going to be fine. And I use this example over and over again. I said, I believe you that you are going to do this right and that you'll be safe and that in your backyard minion, you'll have two over here and two over there and three over there, whatever the law was. I know you can work it out. But if you do this and you do it right and he does it and he does it right and she does it right, then what's going to happen is everyone's going to start doing it. And then it's not going to be right. And then we're going to have problems. And at that stage of the pandemic, we didn't know, again, nobody knew, we couldn't do it. And therefore, every individual, I told and I based myself on this Gemara, said, you have to do it alone. You have to have the Seder alone. You can't make a minion. We had no Kaddish. We didn't have anything. Because there are going to be people who are going to get sick. And we can't have that. And it was the individual giving up what they wanted, what they needed, what they could have done right in order to protect everyone else. Another example, almost at the end. What happens if a person's involved in Tzarchei Rav? Tzarchei Rav is involved in some communal thing. Not a mitzvah per se. There's a principle that if you're involved in a mitzvah, you're exempt from other mitzvahs. Ha'osek b'mitzvah patur. I'm not involved in a mitzvah. I'm just involved in the needs of the community. I don't know, taking a random example. You're trying to figure out where everybody's going to sit Yom Kippur. Inside, outside, with mass, without mass. So you're having meetings late into the night. Busy, busy, busy. Oseik b'tzor chayra. Is it a mitzvah to figure out whether or not this guy is inside or this guy? It's not a mitzvah. I'm sorry. It's not a mitzvah. But it's tzor chayrabim. Tzor chayrabim. Now time comes for Maariv. Time comes for Maariv. Got to have a Maariv. Say Shema. In the middle, if we don't get this done, we're not going to get it done. And I have to say Shema. So which one trumps? What takes precedence? If the Tzarchei Rabbim is not going to get done, if the 2 people, 3 people, 10 people who are involved in whatever the Tzarchei Rabbim is, which is not per se a mitzvah, but it's for the benefit of the community. And if they stop to say Shema, it's not going to get done. Or they continue, and then they don't say Shema. Shema, they don't say Shema at night. They miss it. What should they do? They continue working. They continue working. Now, it sounds like that is a big... There's a mitzvah d'oraisa to say Shema. It's a Torah commandment in the morning and at night. And you're going to miss the mitzvah. There's no making it up. And they're involved in who's sitting where. So you say, that takes precedence? The answer is yes, it does. The individual who has, I need to do this, I need to do that, but there's a tzibur here. Shulchan Aruch Paskins, both in Siman Ayin and Siman Tzad, the Gimel sources 15 and 16. Hayosek b'tzorchei rabim, v'gizman kriyashma, lo yafsik. You're involved in communal needs, and the time for Shema comes, you do not stop. If you finish your job and there's time to say Shema, of course you should say Shema. But right now, we don't stop. And he says further, someone who's involved in Tzorchei Tzibur is as if they're learning Torah. The experience of toiling with the Tzorchei Rabim, which I keep using the same example, where's everybody saying that's what we're holding it as a shul. But we could bring a similarly non-glorious examples of what it means to be Osek B'Tzorchei Rabim. B'Tzorchei Tzibur is as if you're being Osek B'Torah. The Shulchan Aruch is speaking that you're really only supposed to daven from spiritually uplifting experiences. You're not supposed to run in from davening from something that you're not going to be able to concentrate because whatever you were doing was a burden. So you need to stop what you're doing, take a few minutes, get your head into... That's why we start with Ashrei before we jump into Shemona Esrei. You should be learning before you go into Shemona Esrei. Say something. So says the Shulchan Aruch, being Osek B'Tzorchei Rabim is a Simcha Hilo Kishe Osek B'Torah. It's like you're learning because you're serving Hashem's people. You are serving Hashem's people. So you can get straight up from that and go straight into Shemona Esrei. You don't need Ashrei. Who needs Ashrei? We were just dealing with this person and that person's complaint and this one's request. Osek b'tzorchei rabim. What could be better? And he says, V'yesh b'farshim, you know what it means that it's like learning Torah? It's the hainu l'inyan dein etzorch livsok lehispa. You don't have to stop the daven. So you don't have to say Shema. You don't have to daven shachris. You're exempt from mincha. Osek b'tzorchei rabim. I have an obligation. Yeah, you have an obligation. But you're busy with something else that is the larger picture. And that takes precedence over an individual's wants, needs, even spiritual pursuits. One last medrash. An unbelievable story. The medrash in Source 17 explains the pasuk in Sefer Mishlei. The pasuk says, Melech b'mishpat ya'amid aretz. With justice, a king sustains the earth. So a king can sustain the earth if he's using justice. The ish terumot. Now, trumot here has two meanings. Harama is from a language of being conniving or fraudulent. Truma also means that which we separate, laharim, to raise up as the sanctified produce. In the simple meaning of the pasuk, it refers to an ish trumot, means a person who's conniving and fraudulent and not straight. So he's Yarsen, he destroys the world. So a king can uphold the world with justice, as opposed to a fraudulent person destroys the world. The Medrash says, yeah, but whenever you have Shlomo Melech using a word of ish trumot, which has double meanings, so he meant more than simply a fraudulent person destroys the world. He says, ish trumot, imesim in the middle of the first paragraph, imesim adam atzmo kitruma. The person makes himself like truma. What does it literally mean, truma? Truma means set aside. Person takes his crops, he sets aside, and he says, "Hare zu truma," like we do when we bake challah. Hare, it's mufrash, it's set aside. If a person becomes an ish trumot, he becomes a person who sets himself aside. Says the Medrash, "Shemishlechas bezavis habayis." He sits in a corner by himself and says, "Mali b'toyrach hatzibur." What do I need? All the burden of the tzibur. I need to bother myself with the problems of community. I'm going to sit in a corner. I'm going to learn. I'm going to daven. I'll raise my family. I don't need all of these headaches. Mali bidineim. I don't need their judgments. Mali lishmoa kolam. I don't want to hear their voices, which are sometimes a kvetchy voice. I don't need it. I'll be like truma. I'll set aside... Shalom alayich nafshi. Peace be on my head, leave it alone. Says the Medrash, ish trumot yaharsena. Harei ze machriv es ha'olam. Such a person destroys the world. Person who says, I don't need a tzibur. I'm not interested. I don't need their problems. I don't need their complaints. I don't want to be bothered by their... Leave me alone. I'll sit in my corner. I'll do my thing. Ish trumos yarsena. Medrash tells a story in the second parak of Rabbi Yossi as he was dying. He's on his deathbed. And his family, his nephews come in and mitza'o boche. And they find him crying. The great Amora Rabbi Asi. And his nephews can't understand why such a person like this would be crying. Omer lo Rebbe, mipnei ma ata bocha? What do you have to cry about? Yesh Torah shelo lemadata vilimadata? Is there a single piece of Torah that you haven't learned or taught? Not only have you learned it all, you taught it all. Yesh gemilus chasadim shelo asisa? Is there anything, any act of kindness that you haven't done already? Not only that, Hayisa misrachek min hadayanim. You humbled yourself and stayed away from all disputes, and did not allow yourself alone. Sata rishus al atzmacha lehismanos al tzorchei tibor. You didn't allow yourself to get engaged in these things that were going to take you away from your learning and your gemilas chasadim. So you were able to accomplish everything. What are you crying about? It's such a powerful story. Amar lo bini, he says, Aleha ani bocha. That's what I'm crying about. As I sit here on my deathbed and I look back at it, all the learning that I did and all the kindness that I was able to do, and you just nailed it on the head that I was able to do all of that because I didn't engage in tzorchei tzibur that would have taken up some of my time. And I held myself back from engaging. And now, on that, ani bocha, I cry. Shema etein din v'cheshbon. Al shahayisi yachol lasos dineim shal yisho. I was capable of doing something. I could have resolved issues, disputes, fights. I could have done it. But I held myself back to do all the things that I wanted to do. And now I'm the subject of this pasuk of Ish Trumot Yiharsena, a person who sets himself aside and sits in a corner. Look at all the accomplishments, but they weren't involved in the community. And when we, as we conclude, as you step back, and there are these two aspects of a Jew in his Jewish life. On the one hand, we're these yechidim, individuals, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. A Jew has to wake up every morning and say, the whole world is here for me. For me, the whole thing was worth it. For Hashem to create the whole world. All that's going on the planet. For me. To be able to accomplish what I need to accomplish. If it's not going to be, if I'm not going to take responsibility for what I need to do, who else is? I have to. And on the other hand, we're part of Klal Yisrael. Only Klal Yisrael gets the Torah. An individual will never be able to. Not even Avram, Yitzchak, or Yaakov could have received the Torah. Only Klal Yisrael has the rights to it. We're a single goof. All responsible for each other. I can fulfill a mitzvah for someone else because they haven't yet. I'm responsible for the behavior of everyone. We're all one. And the tzibur has this responsibility to the yachid, but the yachid has a responsibility to the tzibur. And a yachid who sits alone and says, I only have to worry about myself and what's good for me and comfortable for me. And we're not even getting into the obvious discussion, which during the time that we're in would be, do we have to all be wearing masks? Do we not be wearing masks? What do we need to do to protect the tzibur? That's the big discussion, which I'm just sort of acknowledging is the discussion. Not even getting, but the idea that a Jew who sits in a corner, so to speak, sets himself aside and says, this is what I need to do, and it's good things. I'm going to learn. I'm going to daven. I'm going to do gemilas. I'm going to do all good things. But al zani bocha, says Rav Asi, I cry. Because I had the ability to impact the tzibur, and I didn't. I set myself aside, and I wasn't involved. And that's our obligation. Ha'osek b'tzarchi tzibur ka'osek b'torah dami. Someone who's involved in the learning, in tzarchi tzibur, in the needs of the community, is as if they're learning. Pater from kriyishma, pater from tefillah, they're osek b'mitzvah. They're involved. It's a simcha hilo. And with that, we conclude one last source. I have a Rebbe, was a Rebbe in high school in NTA when I was in 11th and 12th grade. I thought then that he was already an older Rebbe, but I subsequently found out life goes. When you're in high school, you think everybody's... Now he's an older man, but then he was still pretty young. He's now a Rosh Hashiva in Landers College. He wrote a tremendous journal article years ago, even before I had him as a Rebbe, in 1990, in discussing these two concepts of the Jew and his individual aspects, Vishvilini v'ha'olam, and his responsibility to the klal. And he talked about the philosophers who talk about the different aspects, and he distinguished between the way that we look at the Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, the aspect of the individual. And he writes, although the Torah confirms several elements of individualistic philosophy, it's clearly there, as we've quoted, it would be incorrect to equate that concept of individualism from a Torah perspective with its counterpart in secular philosophy. Just because we've been talking about the individual, but it's not the secular idea of individualism. Because whereas secular individualists are largely concerned with personal rights and liberties, and when we say, as an individual, these are my rights, these are my abilities, I have these rights, the Torah stresses individualism as a foundation of self-worth and sanctity. Yes, Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. That's where I get my self-worth. I wake up every morning and say, this whole world is worth it just for me. That doesn't give me rights. That gives me the self-worth and the sanctity to go about my day and to know that the entire world is worth it for me to be here and to do that which I need to do. It gives me a right to trample on someone else and say, these are my rights. The whole world is it. No. That's not the Torah's perspective on individualism. It is. That's why we find always the individual becomes subsumed under the tzibur. Because that's how we fulfill our self-worth and our sanctity, is being osek b'tzorchei tzibur. As an individual, recognizing how valuable we are, how important we are. B'shvili nivra ha'olam. But on the same time, ein posh b'na tzibur. You can never separate. We give to the tzibur as individual. The tzibur has the responsibility to take care of each individual. And the individual has to give what he can to take care of the tzibur, to give to the tzibur, not to ever be caught wanting to cry, I could have done more. I could have been involved more. And I was concerned with my own value, growth, whatever the things that he's doing good things, Rabasi. But he's crying to be set aside and not to be part of that. And that's the value, as we conclude. That's the value that we have as individuals wanting to give and to contribute and to find our self-worth and sanctity as individuals who can then take that and contribute to the tzibur. Halavai, we should always be zeichet to do that as individuals and as a community, looking out for individuals, and our individuals always thinking community first. What is it that the community needs? What is the value that I can contribute, and how can I sacrifice of myself to be able to contribute to the larger community as a whole? Halavai, we should always be able to do so in good health for everyone. As we celebrate Yom Kippur together, just to conclude with what we started with, as the Rambam says, these 10 days are the days of tshuva and tefillah, even for individuals, are always, always received. This is the time to be able to do so, take advantage of the last couple of days that we have during the special time of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, to take advantage of that, and as a tzibur, to daven together, because as a tzibur, our tefillahs are always answered. It should be a good Gebench Dayor, a successful, meaningful Yom Kippur for all of us in good health.